Welcome to the Internet Advisor Podcast. I'm your host and producer, Foster Brown. Along with my co-host, Gary Baker, and our team of experts, we've been helping people like you since 1998 with your computer problems, introducing you to valuable resources, and promoting tech enterprise throughout Michigan. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour podcast recorded every week at the studios of historic WJR Radio in Detroit. Both hours of the show are available each week on this podcast and are streamed to our affiliates across the state of Michigan. We're also proud to be part of Detroit's newest and fastest-growing podcast network, PodcastDetroit.com. And now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome aboard on an almost summer kind of afternoon here in Michigan. Hi, my name is Foster Brown, the co-host and producer of the Internet Advisor. And we got a great show lined up for you today. We're going to take a look at making movies online or using some of the tools that are online to make a movie. And the movie is called Lighthouse Unmanned. And we'll be talking with Sharma Krauskopf, who is a director, and we've got some other good things lined up for you for this show. Stay tuned. 2 hours of the Internet Advisor.
Now back to the Internet Advisor. Once again, your hosts, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell.
And it's a very good afternoon and early evening to you here on the Internet Advisor, beginning of 2 hours of our weekly show, and delighted to have you with us as our guest. And don't forget, the second hour is your hour, really. It's your show. That's when you get to call in with your questions and get some answers. And that number, if you want to write it down now and get it ready for the 6 o'clock hour when we open up our phone lines, it's 800-859-0957. I have with us in studio here a couple of guest co-hosts, and that is Mr. Kasten Thomas, who's been with us before. Kasten, good to have you back.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here. And I have size 13 shoes, but I still have to stuff Kleenex in the shoes I'm trying to fill for Gary in Florida.
That's one way of looking at it. Oh, dear. Hang on a second. Gary is on the line down in Florida. I want to make sure that he's hearing us and is involved in a conversation, too. Gary, how are you doing?
I was just telling Kasten that, I don't have any shoes on.
So oh, that's right. He's beach bumming it. This is really rough, guys.
You left them up here for me to wear.
Kasten, why don't you introduce somebody that you brought in to help, particularly in the second hour of the program, when we're handling our listeners' calls?
Sure. Tom Lawrence is a good friend of mine, runs a company called Lawrence Systems. Really creative name there, Tom. He's got some big shoes to fill as well, but I think he's up for the task. Just a techie extraordinaire.
All right. Tom, tell us a little bit about your company, Lawrence Services.
So Lawrence Systems, I've started it 14 years ago now. We're IT services, both for mostly small business market in downriver area. I've been working in tech, though, for 23 years is when I first started a paycheck for it. I know I'm a little young looking, but that gray hair comes from a lot of computer repairs.
I bet you are. What was your first computer? Curious.
TRS-80. So I started in the 80s on that. So.
Okay, you started in the 80s.
Yes.
Wow. And Tom, I never asked you this question, but what was your first computer?
Oh, I've got a great story about it, but it's a long one. It was an Apple II that actually loaded off of a cassette deck.
Oh, wow. Gary, how about, we've asked you this question before, but what was your first computer?
Well, we were using tandems, and then we were using... the very first computer I used was a timeshare. It was an old DEC machine.
Oh, no kidding.
That was like you know, we brought that out of mothballs. I'm really not that old. we just wanted to try it out. Got it out.
Oh, I got you. Yeah. Well, guys, this has been a big weekend in technology in general. First of all, for what happened, and later on in the program, we're going to have Cal Carson's got a report that we're going to be running on the WWDC, the Apple event. I'm just curious, anything come out of that that either surprised you guys or that you thought was a real highlight to it? Tom, how about you?
The new Mac Pro, it looks really impressive, especially the one that has all the cores in it. They really did a nice redesign of that.
Yeah.
I kind of like that space gray. It was definitely a cool color, as they called it.
Well, they've also gone for what has been derogatorily called the trash can.
Yes. Yeah, this is much approved over the trash can.
Yes, it is. It's an iMac. As a matter of fact, yes. Which has got 18 cores in some of the biggest ones, but it has a starting price of $5,000. Gear?
Yeah, that's a server, isn't it?
Yeah.
When you're talking about 18 cores, that looks like a server to me.
And they got a 27-inch screen, but then you can also gang like another couple screens to it, and that's really huge.
And it's 5K. So if you're editing 4K video, you need a little extra pixels for the side for the menus.
Oh,
so.
My goodness. Cash, how about you? What, anything come out of that that struck you as...
Oh,
you...
gosh, I was rolling out my new website. I'm sitting here going, there was WWDC this week?
Oh, okay. Otherwise distracted. I was impressed
with... Actually, Kasten, you know, because you play mostly in the security space, Apple doesn't do a great job of running some of the security applications that you would use, does it yet?
Well, a lot of that's being done on the network, and Apple's had a perception of being very, very secure because it's based around the Unix operating system.
Yeah.
So that gets them off the hook quite a bit. But we are seeing an uptick in attacks directed toward Mac, primarily because they've gained a lot of market share.
There you
go. You know, the hackers go where the money is.
Gary, that's always been your principle, is that become bigger and get more market share, as you said, they're going to become a bigger target.
Sure.
And, that doesn't make me feel that good at all, because I'm working on a Mac right now. Yeah. So let's see some of the other things. Oh, coming up Los Angeles this week. Anybody games? You gamers? Tom, you a gamer?
Not really. My kids are, though.
Your kids are?
My kids are.
Your kids
not.
Okay, that's interesting because I'm not a big gamer, but this is huge. It's going to be going on in Los Angeles. It's called the Electronic Entertainment Expo, and it is like the big gamer expo of the year. And they're going to be, I think, some like 75,000 people that have been predicted to be showing up for that, if not more.
Well, it's a combination of all the techie shows, the consumer electronics show, and Comic-Con all rolled into one because you've got the creative people, you've got the money people, and you've got the technical people all converging on that one place.
I don't think I ever understood how big it was until Shane came in here. Shane, who was one of our other tech experts, who is big into gaming, and as a matter of fact, had his own program on another station, and he was telling me in terms of billions of dollars that are spent on gaming, and it really is the new frontier for creative talent.
Oh, well, absolutely.
It exceeds even the Hollywood. I mean, the revenues are higher.
Oh, yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah. That kind of blew my mind when I saw that. So that's going to be going on in Los Angeles, I believe. We're talking 800,000 square feet of exhibits and meeting spaces, including larger-than-life statues of Master Chief, the super soldier hero of Microsoft's Halo video games. It's going to be quite something. Xbox, apparently, coming out with some big stuff there as well. Okay, well, that's coming up this week. Coming up in just a moment, coming to big screens near you, speaking of big screens, is a great new movie. We're going to talk with the director and the executive producer, Sharma Krauskopf, who's going to be with us in studio in just a moment. And I want to once again welcome my co-hosts in studio, Kasten Thomas and Tom Lawrence, and Gary Baker's with me as well from Florida. Orlando, am I right, Gary? You're down in...
No. Orlando's not close enough to the water. So I'm in Fort Lauderdale.
I got it. All right. He's our new pirate of the Caribbean. In any case, I'd like to welcome into the studio somebody we have had a number of times and delighted to have her back, and that's Sharma Krauskopf. Sharma, how are you?
Good. My movie's done.
Woo-hoo. And the movie we're talking about is?
Lighthouse Unmanned.
Lighthouse Unmanned. And just a quick background on the movie, on what that meaning is of Lighthouse Unmanned, because that title is significant.
Okay, the lighthouses across the world were dependent on an employee called a keeper. And they tended the light because they had to time it and keep it going. Well, when the computer came along, it was possible to put the control of the beacons in a centralized location.
Mm.
And what they did was they just, as the keepers put it, threw them all out.
Mm.
And basically they lost their home and their job.
Wow.
And their profession, and most of all, the respect in the community that they had lived with
all
their
lives.
Oh, and they had
huge respect. They were the lifesavers as well,
yeah,
weren't they?
They were the first responders on the shoreline,
yep.
And most people didn't know that. And our goal with the movie is to make people aware of what the lighthouse keepers did, and also to honor them. Most of them are gone now, but they still need to be honored.
Oh, absolutely.
We have got some movement going. We now have little bronze plaques that you can put on lighthouse keepers' graves, and some of their children are having ceremonies at the cemeteries honoring them. So
that's wonderful.
And we have two, Ireland and Scotland both, the governments are going to bring the movie over, and we're going to have a festival
to honor
lighthouse keepers.
Yes.
So I think we're doing a little bit of good.
And that's fantastic. Now, it started three years ago it started as an Indiegogo?
Five.
5 years. If we could show her face, it's like, oh, my Lord. 5 years of work. You began. Matter of fact, we had you on a show talking about an Indiegogo campaign
right.
at that time, a crowdsourcing. And that was the beginning of it. But you were able to get it all done at remarkably low budget.
Yeah, well, we had a couple of problems along the way. We did okay on Indiegogo and got the money that we needed for our lawyer and our accountant. But then the state of Michigan, in their wisdom, decided that the film incentives were no more.
Oh, that's right.
And we had to change lighthouses. We moved from a Michigan lighthouse to New York State.
Which one were you going to do in Michigan?
Point O'Barks.
Point O'Barks. That's right. I remember that from the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah. It was on the shore of Lake Huron. Dean and I are on our way up there for a vacation to see those people. I feel like we let them down, so I'm going up to talk to them.
You ended up in New York State where they do have film incentives, don't they?
Very good film incentives in upstate New York, 45%. So we ended up in a place called Dunkirk, and the lighthouse is Dunkirk Lighthouse. And it's a beautiful, beautiful Victorian house. I mean, it does not look like a usual lighthouse.
Yeah, by the way, I posted on our homepage, if you go to internetadvisor.net, I got a picture of the Dunkirk Lighthouse that you can take a look at there. Now I'm just curious, where is it? It's on, what, Lake Ontario, am I right?
No, it's on Lake Erie.
Oh, it is on Lake Erie, okay.
It's about 40 miles south of Buffalo.
Okay, okay.
Snow district.
Right, yeah, lots of snow. Well, rather than go through all the details, the movie is finished. How long is it right now?
The movie itself?
Yeah, the movie itself.
It's an hour and 45 minutes.
Oh,
it's
great.
A feature motion picture, and that is a lot of work.
I bet.
I had to share that I had no idea how much work it was really going to be.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I thought about this the other day. If the computer hadn't existed, it would have been 10 times as more work.
I bet.
We used the computer. We used Skype to save money.
Mm-hmm.
We used all kinds of resources off of the computer. We communicated by the computer in email, which you would not have had if it hadn't. You know, the movie's about the damage the computer did to the lives of the keepers, and here we are using the computer to do the movie.
You guys, understanding computers, will probably get a kick out of this. During the break, you've told us something about what happened when you tried to produce the video.
Okay, we just finished post production, which is basically you take all of this film that we've gotten in the month that we were on location, and put it into some kind of civilized order.
Mm-hmm.
And to do that, we filmed in 4K with a camera called a RED.
Oh, yes, I've heard of it, yeah.
And I didn't know that 4K was huge. And so I had to get a computer in my office to be able to look at this stuff. So I ended up, you were talking about gaming, I ended up getting built for me a computer.
Yeah, right.
but it was a gaming computer.
Sure, well, sure.
And had 12 cores in it.
12 cores in it. Okay.
Yeah, and the first one, it took 2 days for it to break down, and the motherboard went.
Oh, my Lord.
And this is the 4K. So, okay, they replaced it. They did another one for me and made it a little bit bigger. And it only took 4 days to go down. And I got to thinking, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
And then
I feel like singing a jingle of, you should have called Tom.
Well, I did go to some computer people in my area.
Yeah.
And they didn't know what to do either because the 4K, and we had all of this film. And then somebody told me about Dell's Alien. I'm working in Windows.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yes, it's a gaming computer, right?
Yeah, and
pretty big one.
And Dean loves it. He calls it Bob. And every morning I turn it on, it comes on. I mean, this is a major success. And what goes on during post-editing, and I wanted to talk a little bit about how the computer can actually help people who are doing movies, particularly independent.
Well, can I just say quickly, what you're experiencing with producing an independent movie right now is what's happened to recording industry. For instance, when I started out in the 1980s, 1990s, there were huge studios around here making a lot of money editing audio, just audio, and then also video as well. They went out of business because a lot of that could be done by people, individuals in their homes.
Right.
With computers that they were buying off the shelf. And that's essentially what you're doing now with movies.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that I wanted to mention. I have a program called Power Director. It's made by CyberLink. It's the best movie editing software in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cheap, and it's on the internet.
Isn't that something? Yeah, there it is. Tom, you're...
Oh, yeah. We do a lot of video editing ourselves because we produce a lot of YouTube for my company. But we also built a lot of editing stations. And a lot of people don't realize what it takes to edit all that 4K video, the amount of storage you need, and redundant storage. Because once you copy it, you don't want it all to fail. So we build these workstations. I mean, they can be upwards of $4,000 or $5,000 for these people to edit all this 4K video.
Oh, yeah. And that's why when the iMac, which is the new power, if you will, iMac Pro is the new power Apple computer, was going to be running was a $5,000. That it seems outrageous, but in many ways, that's cheap for what's being done on it, right, Terma?
Yeah, I paid $3,000 for the two that broke down, and
each. Yeah, exactly.
And so when we got the Alien, which is kind of cool.
Well, I tell you what to do. I'm hearing some music in the background, and as Dean said, we hear the break music coming up. We're going to pause for just a second.
Okay.
When we come back, I want you to tell more of the story behind this great movie, which now, by the way, folks, it's in Toronto, I believe, at a festival up there. Lighthouse Unmanned. Sharma Krauskopf is with us. She's a director and executive producer. We'll be back in just a moment with more about how that came to be. Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor. I'm Foster Brown. With me in studio, Kasten Thomas, and we've got Tom Lawrence as well. In the second hour, they're going to be pitching in a very important way and answering questions. And Sharma Krauskopf is with us. She is there's a number of titles around. You're director, I saw, and one. IMDb says you're the executive producer as well.
Right. Executive producer first, then director second.
And you're a screenwriter as well.
And I wrote the screenplay.
You did. Chief cook and bottle washer. You did the whole thing. We're talking, by the way, about a movie that you have heard us talk about on a number of occasions. It's called Lighthouse Unmanned, and it's about the heroes who became victims. That's one of the things.
Yeah, it's our tagline.
The tagline there. People who really were heroes in their communities and who became victims of the changes that happen in life. You know, in some ways, it's kind of interesting because we're seeing it happen now. Even, for instance, headlines now, Verizon is about to gobble up AOL and Yahoo, and they're going to be coming, it's going to be called Oath, 2,100 people lose their jobs.
And it's happening everywhere.
Yep.
That's one of the things that people had told us that was so timely about this movie. This movie, by the way, is a drama. It is I wrote it. It is not based on real characters. It's based on some real facts.
Right, right.
But not real characters. So it's a feature drama. We had actors who were acting parts, and they were absolutely knockouts.
Oh, that's fantastic.
One thing I'm really proud of is the ensemble cast that played. We had two sets of keepers, and they were just absolutely wonderful.
It's in Toronto now at a festival?
No, it's... not until September.
Oh, okay, okay.
But the thing that's holding us distributing it up is that Toronto has to have world distribution rights to their movies. So we are in consideration in Toronto, which means basically that it's not going to happen until September.
Mm-hmm.
And then after September, we hope to be able to start distributing it. And we're going to start distributing in the Great Lakes area.
Oh, good, good.
The first place we're going to go, and that'll be right after Toronto because they're so close together, is Dunkirk so that they can see it.
Right, where the filming was done.
And then it will come here because this is where we are.
That's right.
And we want our friends and everybody to see it. So
the premiere will be in Dunkirk.
No, the premiere's in Toronto.
Oh, pardon me. The premiere's in Toronto, and then you're going to have a showing in Dunkirk. But you're going to kind of publicly launch it here?
Yes.
Okay.
So you'll be rolling out the red carpet here in Detroit.
Ooh.
Maybe. actually, the Michigan Theater in Jackson, near where I live, wants us to roll it out there.
Oh.
They're kind of
landlocked, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
Seems like you need a coastal place to really display it.
Yeah, I think Detroit would be perfect. Anyway, the distribution will happen in two ways, and I think I want to say this. Number one is we might get a Hollywood distributor from Toronto. They come after the best movies there, and I mm-hmm. think we will be one of the best ones there. And
not a little prejudiced about that.
No. The Toronto staff told me that.
All right. Great.
Our story is a whole lot different than the stuff that's being put on the screen right now.
I bet it is.
You know, my wife and I have on our bucket list to visit all of the lighthouses in Michigan and all of the waterfalls.
Ooh.
And we go to these lighthouses, and the stories of the lightkeepers are just so inspiring.
They are.
Yeah, and people just don't know.
Yeah.
They don't understand that these guys, because there was not any communication, no computer, some of them didn't have telephones, they used radios, they just never got to tell their story. And so we're telling it for them. And we start off with a shipwreck to show it.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Well, they led a solitary life, so I imagine it was a little bit harder for some of that to really get out. You know what I mean? So
their
stories weren't shared.
A lot of people don't understand that these guys lived there. They were on 7 days a week, 24 hours a day.
Yeah, it wasn't a part-time job. They didn't it wasn't a shift job.
And before the electric lighthouses, they had to carry the fuel to the lighthouse.
The whale
that was dangerous.
The chain that worked like a pendulum that ran the lights or the beacons. And so it's a really exciting story. But I have a couple.
Hang on, Gary, I think you had something.
Well, I was just wondering if Cassin and his wife are going to visit all of the lighthouses in Michigan. Sharma, do you know how many lighthouses there are in Michigan?
I think right now there are 107 that are being shown by people. That most of them are the lighthouses belong to cities or nonprofits, and they have done them up so you can see them. We have a lot of relic lighthouses, but they're not really considered as active ones.
And some of them have been taken over by private individuals. I know because between 1999 and 2002, I was part of a crew that shot a program called Great Lakes Ports of Call. And as part of that, we saw lighthouses like the Granite Island Lighthouse, which is in Lake Superior, north of... I'm thinking it's out in Lake Superior, and it's literally this big hunk of granite that somebody bought and was outfitting at that time to be his year-round residence, but it was the lighthouse.
Well, I know all about that. Dean and I owned a lighthouse in
That's
Scotland.
That's right, you did.
Oh, wow.
Hey, Gary, I have a question for you because you have just come back from a long cruise in the Caribbean. Now, you've sailed for a lot of years in Michigan, didn't you?
That's right. Over 28 years of sailing in the Great Lakes. boy, have I come to be spoiled by the navigational aids that we have in the Great Lakes. Because when you're looking at a chart and it says there's a red buoy here and a green buoy over there and a lighthouse here, you can count on that happening, or a range marker here, you can count on it being there. And 1,200 miles from the British Virgin Islands back here to Fort Lauderdale, I will tell you that we saw, you know, two-year-old chart, and there's supposed to be a buoy here, and there's no buoy for miles.
Oh, dear.
And you're in fact, we found that there was supposed to be a lighthouse on this point, and there wasn't the lighthouse, and we're going, that's got to be the point. No lighthouse. We got closer, and it was a steel frame lighthouse that had fallen over. Nobody put it back up. And, you know, so we are spoiled in the Great Lakes to having great navigational aids.
Yeah, and I bet around the rest of the world. Now, you mentioned the fact that Ireland and the Great Britain are also interested in the movie and having it there at some festivals to celebrate the lightkeepers.
Yeah, Ireland particularly. We've got two lighthouses in Ireland fighting over who's going to host it. But the idea basically is just to plant seeds.
Yeah.
So people will know that these guys did this, and they're gone now.
Yes, yeah.
And, you know, soon, you know, some of the people that we know and respect and have wonderful jobs, they're going to be gone too. And we should be more conscious to honor the people who are doing things like that.
You know, I don't know that we're going to have a lot of time to talk about all the details of what's going on, but I want you back for that premiere. You're going to come back in and talk about the premiere?
Yeah,
when
sure.
That comes, I'm looking forward to that and hearing about it and publicizing it. And we've had the pleasure of letting people know about that all throughout these years as you've been putting this together. And since five years it took, huh?
Yeah. My hair was gray before I started, but it's grayer than it is now. But let me just say one more thing.
Sure,
and
sure.
That is that the computer has made this possible.
That's true.
We made a movie that's an hour and 45 minutes long for under $100,000. And one of the reasons that we were able to do that is that we did all our casting by computer. We did a lot of the work that we did was done by computer. And one of the things that I wanted to point people towards is if you're into photography or into video, then the computer has access to all kinds of stock footage that can be used at home. And you can make your own little movie about your family or your grandchildren or whoever. Is the world has just changed.
You know, I wonder if, you guys comment on this quickly, we're getting close to the end of our time here, but I wonder if that is what has made Netflix and Amazon and some of these places that have, they produce their own movies, so successful at that, because they can use those kind of resources to produce movies for a whole lot less than it used to cost.
Yeah, we hear about these millions that are spent by Hollywood on their movies. That's not necessary anymore.
You know, in some ways, I bet they don't want your little secret getting out. You only spent what?
And it's a big dynamic change in the market because it takes little. You look at what it takes to get an entire production put together, and we look at someone who produces a YouTube channel. Some of the YouTube channels have as many as 12 million views, and they have only a few people running the entire show behind her.
And they haven't spent much either.
They haven't spent much to produce it.
That's astounding. All right, the movie is called Lighthouse Unmanned. We will keep you up with as much information as we can about when it's going to be premiering. But congratulations to you, Sharma. Back in just a minute with Mr. Mike Brennan and MI Tech News. It's that time on our show for Mr. Mike Brennan, star of stage and screen, and MI Tech News headlines. Mike, how you doing?
Doing great, Foster. Finally had to turn the AC on. It got so hot in the house, right? That's unusual for
Michigan. For Michigan. Gary's dealing with it very well down in Florida. He's got a breeze. You know, there's palm trees in the background. he's doing pretty well down there.
And when it gets too warm, we turn the air conditioning on.
Yeah, yeah, that's
right. You're not wearing a grass skirt, are you, Gary?
I'll never tell.
Okay.
Oh, I thought that was the waitress. Anyway, Moving right along, Mike Brennan's here with us. MI Tech News is a great service that brings us every week headlines of what's going on in technology and entrepreneurship around the state of Michigan. And right now, Mike, let's take a look at some of the headlines that you've got out there. One of them is that Grand Circus, which is a training company that is located in Detroit, is offering free Facebook social media training for some 3,000 Michigan residents.
Right, yeah. Actually, I didn't hear about this till after the fact, so I reminded them I needed to be on their mailing list. But Sheryl Sandberg, Facebook's chief operating officer, came in on Thursday to Grand Circus to announce this. And you have to, of course, apply. Mm-hmm. They're screening people to see who gets it. A lot of the details haven't been worked out yet. But for 3,000 people, I think I'm going to throw my hat in the ring because what the heck, I can always learn to use Facebook better than I'm using it, right? And so if you really want to get into social media, this is an opportunity.
And it's significant, too, because I believe the course is normally a course in coding at Grand Circus, if I'm not wrong, is thousands of dollars. And this is a scholarship that's being offered to 3,000 people for this. Am I right?
Yeah, it's like $8,500 if you do the Grand Circus Boot Camp. But, I mean, you're going to get really good skills coming out of it, and you'll get a good job and more than, you know, get a good ROI, as it were, on that $8,500 investment. But in this case, it's free. Free is good.
Yep. Very, very good. All right. Next headline there. Let's see. Oh, Governor Snyder is going to be signing some income and sales tax capture for development purposes.
Yeah, it's kind of they call it a transformational brownfield. And it's essentially older downtowns, waterfronts, different places that are really run down. And the city or the county or whomever the authority is wants to do something. And so if they do something, then the project that goes in there, they get to capture the various taxes that the state would assess to use for themselves to help underwrite some of the costs. And then also a lot of the materials that are being used on that project then would be tax-free.
Mm.
So at least statewide.
You know, it's been interesting. We've been talking about lighthouses and the ports in Michigan. And in many cases, these ports are trying to restore a lot of the downtown areas and other parts of the city there and become tourist attractions.
Right.
And that's going to mean restoring some of those properties. So this would be a great news for them.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, everybody's short of cash these days for a variety of reasons, and this is a good one.
Mm-hmm. Mike, now one of the other headlines I see here is, and we should tell folks, when you get MI Tech News, you're not just getting print information, but also, Mike, you've expanded it now to present video information, and I see that you've got a video of ITC's Joe Bennett explaining aerial power line inspections.
Well, actually, I went up in the helicopter with him.
Oh, did you?
If you click on the video, I shot about 30 seconds of video from the left seat in the helicopter. And we were, like, skimming just over the wires. It was kind of fun. I enjoy that sort of thing. And don't get a chance to do that very often, so that's included in there. But they were doing a semi-annual inspection of the lines. They do it via helicopter because there's thousands of miles of lines. And just to make sure that, you know, there's no frayed wires or transformers or any of that jazz. And they have a crew of folks from ITC that goes up that knows how to spot that. Because you're telling me, you're zipping right along in that helicopter. So, because the pilot was pointing things out to me, and I wasn't sure what to look for, so I was missing it. But if you want to see a fun video that, afterwards we flew over Ann Arbor and flew over Michigan Stadium. And I don't have that on my website, but I'll share it with you if you'd like. I shot some pictures of aerial photographs of downtown and synced it up to the Victors. So.
All right. Gary, that should make you happy to hear.
You gotta love that.
Mike Brennan, the editor of MI Tech News. And matter of fact, Mike, we've got a special program coming up next week that you're helping me to organize, and that's going to be focusing on the application of video surveillance that's being kind of mandated for cities like Clinton Township, and also the city of Detroit already has a project called Project Greenlight. Am I right?
Right, yeah. And the Greenlight Project is, I'm told anyway, I haven't spoken directly with the Clinton Township Supervisor, but he's going to be on your show next week, yep. And you can ask him. But I'm pretty sure it's modeled after that. Everything I read says it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then also some folks from Comcast. Anybody that has Comcast or Xfinity right now is being flooded with ads on video surveillance, both for the business and the home. So you're going to get the vice president for the Heartland region for business development
Okay. That's
going to call in and explain everything, what that's all about.
Right. Very important collaboration with business. Mike, thank you so much. So, Mike, what is the cost of getting all of this wonderful information?
Well, it's free as long as my advertisers keep paying for it. It's free.
And that's mitechnews.com. Or you can go to internetadvisor.net. And when you see Mike's smiling face, you got a link that you can click on there where you can sign up for it as well and keep you up in touch with what's going on in technology and entrepreneurship in the state of Michigan with a seasoned reporter like Mr. Mike Brennan. Mike, thanks for being with us again and have a great weekend.
Thanks, Foster.
All right, Mr. Mike Brennan, our guest here. Hey, Gary and guys in studio cast and Thomas and Tom Lawrence is here as well. We're getting ourselves ready to go to our second hour, and the second hour is when we're going to hand this program over to our listeners. And if you happen to be, just kind of sitting out there with a mint julep, but you've got a problem on your computer and you would like to get some help with it, we've got people who will be standing by to help you with that. Starting this next hour, 800-859-0957 is the number. Gary, before we go and into our break, and I'm just curious, I asked you this before, but maybe a little more thought on it. What was your impression of the Apple announcements this week and some of the things that they released as a diehard Windows user?
Well, I think Apple is really trying to breathe some life back into a product line that they've milked a little bit,
mm-hmm.
Because people were willing to buy it just because it said Apple without really understanding that they really hadn't kept up with the technology. And so I thought it was really great that they, stepped back into the game, really could put together a pretty darn, I know that some of the critics panned it,
mm-hmm.
but I thought it was a very credible, upgrade from what they had put out in the recent years.
I was curious, Kasten and Tom as well, there was a lot of criticism of the HomePod as being like a too little too late. Tom, is that thought?
Yeah, it's like they're playing catch up with everybody else. I mean, Google's had theirs for a while. Amazon, oddly enough, is leading the market really in that in-home thing.
Isn't it interesting?
Yeah. Who predicted that?
Who would have thought that?
Who would have thought that? So we've already seen the devices out there, and it's okay to consumers. So Apple's going, hey, look at us. We got one too. It didn't feel like it really was thought out of a product.
They have most often, Gary, I think, and maybe Kasten, your thoughts on this as well. They have made their money stepping into technology that somebody else developed.
They really polished the technology that our people developed. They, they were first with the phones and things like that, but they really brought it up a notch. Steve Jobs, when he was leader as a visionary, was really pushing the envelope of his engineers to really make this incredibly polished user experience.
Right.
And that's what Apple became very known for. You just used it. It just worked. It didn't crash on you. Apps didn't lock up. When they quit innovating, it's because they lost an innovator, I feel.
Well, the big innovations weren't always technology. I mean, the iPod came out and it revolutionized the music industry.
That's true.
That was fundamental.
Yeah.
The idea of the App Store, everybody has app stores now, including Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
So the way that Apple monetizes this is entirely different. And so it's not always the technology. It's combining the technology with the way people operate and want to consume things that really makes a difference in the way that Apple approaches a lot of this.
By the way, I should mention that I have got a special interview that I did with Kel Carson, our Apple man here, and I've posted it online so you can get a pretty extensive, about 20 minutes we spent when you combine the two parts of it, talking his perspective on, and he's been using Apple devices for a long time. Interesting, especially his reaction to the iPad Pro and to the Power iMac that has come out. These called the iMac Pro.
And it's a good listen if you didn't make it to WWDC, but you're an Apple aficionado.
There you go.
Got to listen.
By the way, I'll remind you this quickly right now, and in our second hour, I'll remind you again, Mac Group meets this coming Sunday, and that's going to be at 3 o'clock. And that's all coming up. We'll tell you more about that, but if you go to internetadvisor.net, you can find all the information you need there to attend that meeting and also to catch Kel's comments. Coming up in just a minute, the news at the top of the hour, and then after that, we'll be back with your questions at 800-859-0957.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. To see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage, theinternetadvisor.net. You'll discover past podcasts, our free toolkit with software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and many other resources. You'll also find links to mitechnews.com, our co-sponsored weekly tech and entrepreneur newsletter, edited by Mike Brennan. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact button on the homepage and send us an email with the details. And don't forget to look for us on Facebook and Twitter and at Detroit's newest podcast network, PodcastDetroit.com. Now, let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor.
Welcome back to hour number two of the Internet Advisor. I'm Foster Brown, your co-host of the program, and this is your time. If you've got a problem with your computer, with your phone, with your printer, whatever you've got there, we'd love to give you a hand. Give us a call at 800-859-0957. Again, that's 800-859-0957. It all depends on your questions. Welcome to hour number two of the Internet Advisor, and this is your hour. Our motto here is the only dumb question is the question you don't ask. There isn't a dumb question out there. No matter how small or how big, you may not have been using the computer for very long. That doesn't matter. Don't worry about the fact that maybe you don't know all the lingo, but you do know that the computer is not working, you're not connecting, Wi-Fi is down, whatever the problem may be, you know that problem, and we'd love to help you unravel that and get some answers. 800-859-0957. Just think of that. Free for nothing. You've got a bunch of experts in here ready to talk with you and answer your questions. That's starting with Mr. Gary Baker, who's with us from down in sunny Florida. Gary, good to have you with us for the second hour of the show.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here for hour number two, where we get to answer other people's questions.
And that's matter of fact,
people answer ours.
That's how we started, Gary and I, in 1998 we began. It's getting closing in on 20 years this next February. And it began during my morning show on WJR on Saturdays on the weekend. And we found that people were really anxious to use this as an opportunity, especially back then when the Internet, we were just kind of, people were getting on board using the Internet and were having trouble with those noisy modems in particular.
Yeah, that worldwide what? What is that going on? And, you know, we found that other people were making the same mistakes we were. We were just a half a step ahead of them figuring it out.
So, that's right. You know. That's what made us experts at that time. But this time around, we've got some people who are genuine experts as well, along with Gary, and that is Kasten Thomas, who's with us. Kasten, thank you so much for being in studio with us today.
Well, it's better to be in the studio than out in that 90-degree heat outside right now.
Got the air conditioning is working very nicely in here. Thank you very much. Kasten, tell us a little bit about your company.
My company really specializes in advanced security technologies directed for large companies.
Okay.
So we're having a lot of fun with that.
And then also with us in studio, and I, as a matter of fact, we're getting to know one another, is Tom Lawrence of Lawrence Systems.
Yeah.
Am I right? Hang on a second. We make sure that you're... Go ahead, hit the button. I think that's the button there.
That's the button?
We got it.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah, it's all about pressing the right buttons. It's all about the job.
Yeah, Lawrence Systems, and you are a troubleshooter, tech troubleshooter.
Troubleshooter, tech shooter. So I've been working in this industry for like about 23 years now, and I own Lawrence Systems, which is both small business services for IT, and we have a retail store where we help consumers with the problems. And kind of a side channel to that is we have a YouTube channel that is a direct spinoff of that.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, because a lot of people have questions, and I heard you guys discussing it just on your last show about how do I manage passwords because they're difficult things. So we put entire reviews together step by step with tutorials because instead of us explaining something on the phone, we're like, oh, let me just send you the video link to a video we produced. We even produce videos on how to clean up your computer and how to actually do it step
Wonderful.
By step.
You know, so by the way, folks, this may sound like competition. It ain't. This is what we love to do is to put you in touch with resources that are out there 24/7 to help you. So how would people get to your channel on YouTube, Tom?
Easiest way to do it is go to lawrencesystems.com, LAWRENCE, and systems with an S at the end.
Okay, systems, com, and from there they can jump off to the YouTube channel.
Yep, there's a DIY channel, and there's even a link from Internet Advisor. You guys have
woo-hoo!
To my show,
so I love it
to start.
Now, you also, I understand, do a podcast.
I do. It's a Linux podcast, which I get deeply technical with a few other co-hosts,
okay.
But we make it fun and a little bit lighthearted, but we get dive into very deep Linux topics and everything around the open source community.
Okay. Where do you broadcast that? What is the channel that you're on for that?
Podcast Detroit.
Podcast Detroit.
Yeah,
oh, great.
Heard of those guys, right?
I've heard of those guys, yeah. So you're on the same podcast network that we are on.
You can find it at Podcast Detroit, and we have our own dedicated site, which is smlr.us.
smlr.us.
Yep, for the Sunday Morning Linux Review. And yes, we actually record on Sunday mornings at 7 a.m.
I love it. Okay.
And Foster, I don't go on Facebook very much, but when I do, Tom Lawrence has a Facebook feed. Some of his YouTube videos that are up there are absolutely hilarious.
Okay. So where would we look for you on Facebook then? Under Tom Lawrence?
Yeah, under Lawrence. You can look up Lawrence Systems or Tom Lawrence, me personally, and you'll find all the fun videos we do.
Excellent. So, folks, those are resources that are out there for you. I hope that you will take advantage of that. I understand that there's not many people probably in our audience that are Linux aficionados or very adept at that, but what Tom is saying is you've got a great resource with your YouTube videos for all sorts of other computer problems. Now, that's the resource that's available for you folks here right now at 800-859-0957. And what we're going to be doing is, in just a minute, we're going to be stepping out for a break. Kel Carson and I got together on the phone before he left for Atlanta a little earlier on this week, and I recorded a full 20-minute conversation with him about the WWDC. And that is the Apple's release this last Monday at the beginning of the week, and all the things that they announced there and some of his perspectives on it. Really interesting conversation. What we're going to do when we come back from our break is to play part one of that for you, so you get some of the sense of what Cal and I talked about. And then part two is available along with part one on our Internet Advisor website. So we're going to be doing that in just a moment. When we come back, Cal Carson and I will be talking about his analysis of WWDC. And then when we come back, we hope that you have got all your questions piled up here and we can start answering them. The number is 800-859-0957. And if you have a problem and don't call to get some help with it, well, my goodness, shame on you. We're waiting here for you. 800-859-0957. Looking forward to talking with you on the Internet Advisor. It's our pleasure, as always, to bring our Apple expert fresh from the orchard. Following WWDC, that's the Worldwide Developers Conference that began at the beginning of the week. Cal Carson is not in studio with us right now, but faithful reporter that he is going to be giving us his perspective on the Apple announcements that were made this week from Atlanta, Georgia, where he's at right now. Hi, Cal.
Hey, Foster. How's it going today?
Very well, sir. Glad to have you on here. And as always, I know that you've got some fresh perspectives on Apple and the announcements that were made this week. I tell you what, let's start with just kind of an overall perspective on this. What did you think of this WWDC compared to past ones?
I can say one thing for certain. WWDC takes place on the West Coast, and we're in the East Coast. So we don't actually start seeing it until 1 o'clock in the afternoon. It starts at 10 o'clock out there. And every year, unless I happen to be off work, which is hardly ever during this time, I can never get a chance to see the whole keynote. But this year I was very lucky. I saw all minus 15 minutes of it, which was really wonderful because it lasted almost 2.5 hours.
Yeah, I know.
It was chock loaded.
It was marathon. This is one of the longer ones, isn't it? Or actually, they've all kind of gotten around the 2-hour length, I think, in the past as well. Did I hear you say it was shock loaded?
No, chock loaded.
Oh, shock.
Yeah, I did not. I found no shocks in this particular one at all. It came out pretty much the way I expected it to. Everyone was saying, well, maybe they'll say something about the iPhone. Mm. And I'm going like, you're not going to hear anything about the iPhone until September or so, because that's when they traditionally talk about it. And there was no real talk about the iPhone other than the fact that they talked about iOS 11, which is coming in December. And that will affect the iPhone, of course. And they showed some of the possible features that are going to happen with it. It's going to help with the iPhone, but it's going to totally change or really be a monumental change for the iPad. And that was really good. One of the things they talked about in it that's really cool, with the iPad, with iOS 11, you'll be able to do drag and drop between applications, which is a pretty big thing. So if you were working on something in Photoshop and then you want to take that something and move it, let's say, over into a web development package that you were doing on it, you could literally drag and drop it into that application. Wow. And that's a big game changer, because being able to move in between applications and do that sort of thing saves time and money.
Cal, is it fair to say that Apple is doing its best to kind of push the iPad into, with the iPad Pro, into a place where it's competing with things like Microsoft Surface?
I believe so. And a matter of fact, in some ways, I think it's creating even more of a niche of itself, in the sense that in addition to it becoming a business tool and being able to run business-like applications, Excel and PowerPoint, where they have Keynote and that sort of thing on the iOS side, it is a highly creative tool for creative artists, graphic artists, to be able to create things on it that are very, very impressive. They did some demonstrations that were just absolutely mind-blowing with the iPad, especially in the gaming world as well. And those things are really starting to sit out really extremely well. Matter of fact, there was one where they were using the iPad and augmented reality, which was just awesome. You would actually you'd use the rear camera on the iPad, and let's say you focused it on a table, and then you could take tools and place a coffee cup on the table. And then as you moved your iPad around at that table, it would reveal the different sides of the cup, the shadows. You could change how they drop. Wow. The whole shooting match. It was really impressive.
And these are all things that are being developed for iOS 11, right?
Correct.
Now, that for the sake of the audience as well, iOS 11 is the operating system for the mobile devices. They'll be like the iPhone and the iPad. Am I right?
Correct. Yeah, the iPhone and the iPad. And iOS 11 interacts with watchOS, which they also announced a new version of that as well. And watchOS is the operating system that runs on the watches that allows the phone and the Apple Watch to talk to each other. And they've got a lot of new features with that as well.
Talk about some of the hardware that popped up at Apple's WWDC this week.
Well, let's go back to the iPad. The iPad Pro now comes in two configurations. It came in two configurations before, which is like almost a 12-inch one that's been around for a while. And then it also came in like a 9-inch size. But for some reason or another, the 9-inch size needed a little expansion. So they dropped the 9-inch size, and they came out with a 10.5-inch size for the iPad Pro. So you get it in the 12, and you can get it in the 10. That extra bit of real estate was really gathered a lot by the fact that the side bezel is much, much thinner on that new iPad Pro, so it gives you more screen area to work with.
Yeah, much more
and
real estate.
That was the biggest thing in the iPad arena.
Mm-hmm.
What got me excited more than anything else is when we got into the Macs. Because they came out with just a boatload of new Mac product. We have a new MacBook, which is faster. It's got some speed bumps and stuff like that, and it runs quicker. The same with the MacBook Pro, got speed bumps, and that's running faster and has nicer screens to it. What really got me excited was two of them. One was the new iMacs, which are just incredible.
Yeah.
The screens are all the 4K screens now.
Oh, my.
And the price point, you can get into a 21-inch iMac with a 4K screen starting at $1,300.
Mm.
And the processors are a lot faster. They're now taking laptops, taking advantage of the new KB processors that they came out with.
Yeah.
And so those are in the new iMacs. They're also in the new MacBook Pros as well, and the new MacBooks. So they're using those processors in most of the machines. They're putting larger hard drives into the iMacs. Matter of fact, SSDs are coming in just about all of them now. And then if you want to get more space and have some SSD capability at the same time, they're going with larger fusion drives up to 3 terabytes in size.
Wow.
So it's great. I was really excited about that. And I was cranked up about that in itself and some of the things they were showing until they turned around and said, oh, we have new iMac Pros.
Cal, that was almost the Steve Jobs one more thing.
Yeah, without a doubt.
We should have a drum roll, I think, for this one, because there was a huge announcement about the new iMac Pro.
Yeah, and this iMac Pro, the baseline one to start off with, has got 8 cores in it. So you got 8 processing cores in that machine.
Wow.
But your top-of-the-line one has 18 cores. And so it can just blaze through just about anything. I mean, mm-hmm. if you're creating animation or that sort of thing, it's going to be so smooth and mm-hmm. and flawless looking. I'm in the business, and I go like 11 teraflop. I don't know what that really feels like, but I know it's fast. So, you know, those sort of things that are out there available for you. You can put, they can take more memory right inside of the machine itself, up to 128 gig.
Yeah.
So 3D modeling and that sort of thing, things that people are doing with a pro size type machine, they'll be able to do. And a lot of people had said in the past, you know, I'd like to be able to take advantage of the beauty of that big iMac screen,
mm-hmm.
but they're not fast enough. They're not at a pro level. Well, now they are. And in addition to that, even if you've got a 27-inch iMac Pro sitting there, you go like, I need some more. Well, you can hook up to 2 5K displays to that existing iMac. So now you got 3 of them going on at the same time.
Amazing.
That ought to give you enough screen space to work with.
We're talking with Cal Carson. He's calling us from Atlanta, Georgia, where he's on assignment for another project that he's involved with. Yeah, that was part one of our conversation with him. If you'd like to hear part two of that complete report of from Cal about Apple, simply go to internetadvisor.net. You can see it right there. We'll be back in just a minute. Perry is on the line with us from Ohio, and we're waiting for your call at 800-859-0957. Tom Lawrence is in studio here along with Kasten Thomas and Foster Brown, ready to answer your questions. Get on the phone. We'll be with you in just a moment. We'll return after this break. Thank you for being with us here on the second hour of the Internet Advisor. I thought I'd sneak that part one of my interview with Cal Carson. Part two, it's up already on the homepage at internetadvisor.net. By the way, there is a Mac Group meeting tomorrow. That's Mac Group Detroit. It's going to be at 3 o'clock, and it's going to be at the Birmingham Temple. That's on 12 Mile in Farmington Hills. For more information on that, go to our homepage, internetadvisor.net, and you can find out more about that. Let's go to our phone lines and say hello to, let's see, Perry from Ohio. Perry, welcome to the Internet Advisor, and thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you. I appreciate taking my call.
What can we do for you?
I'm an older guy, but I'm kind of familiar with computers.
Okay.
And I thought it would be kind of fun to download music, and I've been investigating peer-to-peer and MP3. I don't really want to get into the peer-to-peer thing. That's kind of iffy, but
You
don't know what you're downloading, and it's kind of legality things.
Yeah.
But anyway, MP3, as I understand it, is not the highest quality file or format that you can get. Is there something better? My ultimate goal is to be able to download it, and once I have it onto my hard drive, I'd like to be able to to play it from I have a good stereo at home. Let's play it through a stereo system.
But there are systems like, for instance, Sonos has some wonderful speakers and a good system for that. Tom Lawrence, you had some thoughts?
Yeah, MP3s are actually pretty high quality if they're encoded properly. They have what they call a variable bitrate system, so you can record them at low quality, so they're nice and small, or wonderfully high quality, so you can hear all those fun details in it. There's other formats, such as Ogg Vorbis, which are supported by some players, but you're going to find MP3 is a more universal support.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're looking for ones probably at the 192 or higher bit rates. That's going to be
192 or higher.
Right.
The bit rate.
You got
okay.
it.
Well, yeah, generally, you can look into the properties of the file to find out recording quality that it's made at. But another good tip is just to look at the file size based on the length of the recording that you have.
Yeah.
I see.
So if it's pretty short, what should it run, guys, of a decent quality MP3?
There are only a few megs, maybe you know, 5 or 6 megs to run. I mean, but you can, even in Windows, just right-click, do a properties of the file, and it'll tell you what the bit rate is. And if you see some that are even at, 320, there's your really high-fidelity ones on there. So
we're looking for a bit rate of 192 or higher.
Right.
Okay.
That would indicate the higher quality audio then.
Yeah, it sounds like, Perry, that you can use almost any audio software to do that if it allows that.
Yeah, there's a lot of audio. You can use things like, if you're looking to convert them yourself or pull them off of a CD, there's several different tools you can use, such as VLC is a really popular one. It will do the conversion, and when it does the conversion, you can choose the higher bit rates. So when you're, you choose
the
encoding.
What's the name of that tool, the program, or whatever it is?
VLC Player. It's
Victor Lawrence Charlie, VLC.
Okay. Yep.
But only download it from a reliable location.
Now, Cassin's, he's the security man.
I'm the security guy.
Listen to that. As a matter of fact, you, Terry, you said something about that beforehand that I thought was really astute on your part, which is you got to be careful if you're going to these sites which are BitTorrent sites.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, those kind of things. Because they are notorious for having all sorts of garbage attached to them.
They really are,
I guess, huh? Yeah.
Yeah, so you have to be very careful with that. If you're looking for a safe way to download software, and DLC is definitely included in that list, one of my favorites is Ninite, NINITE.com. It is a wonderful resource to get programs loaded on your computer without having the cruff and the things that want to get loaded with them. And it's a trusted site. They've been around for quite a while.
Yeah, it's NINITE.com.
Yep.
Ninite or Ninite. Whichever you want, but that's a great site. I heard, was it Bleeping Computers with another one?
Bleeping Computers is good as well. They're
Bleeping
trusted.
Computers is another good one. But I am finding it really hard to find, Carson, sites that are safe and trustworthy.
Yeah.
You know, do that.
Right.
Especially with downloads.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You really need to be looking at the original source of someone you trust, because if you don't, you do not know what you're putting on, particularly if you're getting pop-ups saying, download our software, there's a problem with your computer.
Oh,
don't do it. That's
you
the
don't
worst
want anything
thing to
like
do.
That, huh?
You know, the other thing too, Perry, that I found is that I will go, for instance, I'll go to a site and I'm going to download what I think is the software, only it's another piece of software that they're offering me. Not
yeah,
the piece
I
that
yeah,
I wanted.
I see that happening sometimes. And I'm kind of savvy as far as that kind of stuff
goes.
I don't download anything that I don't trust. But,
I have my mother's voice running. I have my mother's voice running from when I was about four years old. Don't do it.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Great maternal voice. All right, Perry, thank you very much for your call. You've asked a great question, okay?
All right, thank you.
Thank you. It was an excellent question. By the way, folks, that's a good example of a question that may seem kind of simple, but boy, is it important, because you can get stung so badly.
I had a friend who spent a lot of hours before he knew what he was doing. He had an entire amazing physical CD collection, and he was ripping them all because, this seems like it takes up too much space. So he lowered the bit rate, and then he couldn't figure out why they sounded so awful. And he's like, is it my headphones? I'm like, no. You simply made a mistake. He goes, but I've been doing this for a week. And I'm like, you made a really big mistake then.
Yeah.
You get what you pay for.
All right, here's the phone number, folks. 800-859-0957. Delighted that you're starting to call in, and we can get some help for you. Here we go. Let's talk with Bob from Garden City. Welcome to the Internet Advisor, Bob. How can we help you?
Well, thank you for answering my question. I've experienced a problem with Siri lately where she's become hard to get hold of. Sometimes I might call her name 5 or 6 times, and that's with no background noise, and she doesn't answer.
Yeah.
And then I wait a little bit, and then I have no problem getting a hold of her. But I'm finding that more and more.
Guys, any thoughts?
Are you seeing this when you're connected to a Wi-Fi, or are you connecting to the cell network when this is happening?
No, when I'm on the cell network.
Okay. Are you sure that you have full good signal on there? I'm more of a Google user myself, but I do experience a lot of problems with it when it just doesn't have a strong signal. It sometimes is a little less responsive because it's doing voice recognition that's not being done necessarily on the phone. It's sending it out to the cloud and back to process. So you need it has to have plenty of bandwidth to get there.
Yeah, the signal is not a problem.
And okay. What model of iPhone are you using, Bob?
6S.
6S, okay. Mm-hmm.
That should be pretty good in terms of, you know, I was saying that some of the, matter of fact, we were kind of talking amongst ourselves during a break. There's been a lot of negative analysis after following WWDC.
Yeah. You know, I don't think they're really as up to date. I mean, we were doing a test, me and one of the guys, because I have a tech that's an iPhone guy, I'm an Apple guy. So we were doing a test of who could get it faster, and it was really impressive how fast Google's. I'm using the actual Google phone itself, the Nexus line, and it is just I can throw it across the room, and it picks my voice up in the most amazing way, understands everything I say, and he's like aggravated with Siri.
Yeah, I you know the terrible truth of the matter is that Siri really isn't playing in the same league. Pardon me, this is my opinion, okay, Foster Brown? I don't think it's playing in the same league as Google Voice and Alexa.
Yeah, both of them are just so ahead of the other systems. I don't, you know, I'm not saying that Siri wasn't good. It's just now that we have these other ones, we go, I guess it doesn't look as good. We got something shinier.
But guys, Bob's got a problem, so.
Yes, let's.
So, Bob, do you know how to unload applications on your iPhone?
Yes, I do.
Okay, have you done that?
No, I haven't, but I wanted to mention, if I go to my Google app, I have no problem at all.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, there could be a reason for that, because when your memory is filled up on the iPhone and you bring Google to the forefront, it is running in the foreground, as it's called. Siri runs in the background. So if you know how to double-click on your home key and then get rid of the apps, I would unload all of your apps and then do a full restart by holding down the home button and then
the power
button
at the same time
until the Apple comes back. That's going to give you a clean load of your operating system. There won't be any memory leaks. And that might give Siri a better chance of grabbing some of the background processes so that it can work better.
Very good point. Very good point.
And you might want to try removing Google to see if that's causing interference with, you know, you don't want them playing tug-of-war with each other. You know?
Apple doesn't work that way.
Okay.
So, Bob, you had a comment?
You're saying I need to remove all of the apps from the phone to do that?
Not remove the apps, but remove them. What happens is all of the apps are loaded and those occupy the memory. And then Siri's trying to find memory in order to work. And this is a layman's approach. So techies, don't write me nasty emails. But essentially, your memory fills up and you're not deleting the applications, but you're removing them from memory.
Okay.
And if you can get Siri to respond, you can ask Siri, how do I remove apps from memory? And there are also some YouTube videos on how to get your iPhone all cleaned up. So,
okay.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning it. YouTube videos are a great place to go. Just go to the YouTube channel and start loading it in.
Yep, absolutely. Start looking for a solution.
All right, Bob.
Yep, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. A great question. Thanks for asking it. 800-859-0957. John in Livonia, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How can we help you?
Hey, I listen to you guys all the time. First time I've ever called in. Anyway.
Let's see if we can help.
I got this, like a tablet, small tablet. I got it. It's a Verizon thing.
Yeah.
And lately, I find that if I go and like do a Google search, I get it stays up for a minute and I can type my search in and it's like waiting to load. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden I get a little window that pops up and it says, unfortunately, Chrome has stopped. And you get a choice of report or okay. And I just hit okay. And I keep trying to do it. I've found that I've just had to open Yahoo and do a search on Yahoo because for some reason Chrome just keeps closing on me. And I've tried uninstalling it and reinstalling it, and it just doesn't seem to take care of the problem. I just wondered if there's some kind of remedy.
Well, do you have any weird plugins or that may have unloaded, extensions that have loaded as well?
No, I don't have. It's a tablet. I don't use a tablet a whole lot. I just use it for
watching
YouTube videos and stuff. I do a lot of handyman stuff around the house.
Gotcha.
I've been watching a lot of YouTube videos lately, but I haven't saved them or anything like that.
No, I think he's asking about extensions in the Chrome browser. Am I right, Tom?
Yeah. Yep, because when you sign into Chrome, let's say on your laptop, and then you sign in again on your tablet or any other device, whatever settings and extensions you have follow you and load into that. And some of those could be causing a conflict. The other thing you can do is go into the settings. You're going to get a little deep in here, but it's settings. And then you go to the applications, and there's an option to clear the cache. And it may not get cleared when you uninstall the application. So when you clear the cache, what you're doing is clearing all the files it held behind there. And sometimes it'll say clear data or clear cache, depending on how the application is. And when you wipe that, it probably will have you sign back in, but that does help solve some of the problems with apps. I've actually seen it happen frequently with the Facebook app.
Okay, we're gonna step into a break in just a minute, John. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put you on hold and let you wrap up any kind of questions you have during the break.
Oh, that, you know, I'm going to give it a shot. I'll do exactly what you said.
Oh, okay.
I appreciate it.
All right, great.
Thanks a bunch.
All right,
we'll be here next week.
Yeah, you can let us know by going to internetadvisor.net. You can send us a note there. Suzanne and Laura, we will be with you in just a moment after this little timeout. Thank you very much to Tom Lawrence and Kasten Thomas, who are with us in studio here helping. You guys are smart. I tell you, I stand in awe of our tech help here and the great job that they do. They got lots of practical experience, and that's what we're bringing to bear to help you with your questions as well. So, by the way, the hint is call early. As Cal says, call often. 800-859-0957. We'll be back to wrap up some of those questions in just a moment. Well, I'd like to thank some of the folks behind the glasses we see who have helped us. And Daniel Mason, thank you so much for doing a great job there. She is the friendly voice that answers the phone here and does a wonderful job. And our first hour, Mike Stett, who has juggled grenades during that time, did a marvelous job of that. Thank you so much for helping us. You folks are what makes the program happen. And I want to thank, by the way, as well, my guest in studio, Tom Lawrence. Thanks for being here. Good to have you on here with us. And they just told me something that I did not know. If you go to internetadvisor.net and go to the bottom of our webpage there, you will see that we have this computer, you know, companies you can trust, local computer companies you can trust. And we do that when people call in and say, hey, this is a great one to go to. They can help you out. Guess what the first one there is? Lawrence Technology Services.
Yep, that's me.
So your shop is in Southgate, I understand.
It is in Southgate.
Excellent. All right. So if you go to internetadvisor.net, you can click off on that, and it'll take you to the site. You can find out more about store hours. Just generally, when are you open?
Monday to Friday, 10 a.m. till 7 p.m. and 11 to 4 on Saturdays.
All right. That's Lawrence Technology Services.
Yes.
And that's in Southgate. Okay, great.
You know, Foster, that page is a great resource for people to go to. And, you know, I encourage people to email us with recommendations
Absolutely.
For other people to add to that list.
Yeah, somebody said, why don't you have a program where you do like an Angie's List? And well, we got that here. And because the people who we have on this trusted local computer workshops, those are people that you folks have called in and said, these people do really good work. And we've got places like the Lawrence Technology Services and Mac Professionals do a great job out in Livonia. Icon Computer Services in Wayne, Michigan. Just a whole bunch of people who are doing great work for people. And we don't have people on unless we get that recommendation from you. That's very important to us. So, Kasten, thank you as well for coming in.
Always glad to be here.
Stepping in to help. Thanks so much. All right, let's go to Rhonda from Detroit. Rhonda, how are you doing? You had a question for us about, I think, some seminars, right?
The scholarship for coding
yes.
in Midtown Detroit.
Absolutely. And that's going to be, matter of fact, we're going to be having some more information on that coming up in a little while, not next week, but the week after. We're going to have the head of Grand Circus on. He's that got the training organization is called Grand Circus. And they're going to be collaborating with Facebook, and they've got 3,000 scholarships that they're going to be giving out. So the If you go to internetadvisor.net, I believe I have the information up there. Or if I don't have it right now, I will. Oh, it's, I know where it's going to be. It will be under Mike Brennan's MI Tech News. You know where the
Mike Brennan, MI Tech News.
Yes, it's MI Tech News headlines. I will have those headlines up there for you so you can click on that. It's not there right now, but after the show is over this afternoon, later on this evening, I'll put that information up for you, okay?
Okay. Do you know what the age requirement is?
I don't think there's an age requirement involved in it. I don't think there's an age. You don't have to be real young or
old. Yeah, are you worried about being too old or too young?
No, I think maybe 18 to 68, huh? I'm somewhere in there.
All right, there you go.
You're in there, you should be good.
You should be good, Rhonda. Thanks so much. And as I say, I will put more of that information up there. That was one of the headlines from MI Tech News. As a matter of fact, if you go to mitechnews.com right now, you will find that as one of the headlines in there, and you can click on that and get more information. Thanks so much for giving us a call. Let's see if we can wrap up a couple more questions here. Laura from Jackson, how you doing? Welcome to the Internet Advisor. How may we help you?
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So I have a new Lenovo Yoga that I purchased within the last 2 months.
Hey, you know what, Laura? Laura, I'm sorry. I'm going to do something. I'm going to put you on hold and ask Danielle if she can call you. We're going to get your phone number so we can call you back because we have a horrible phone connection, and I want to make sure that I can answer your question by because I can hear you, okay? Laura from Jackson, Danielle's going to call you back, and we will have you on in just a moment because the phone was it was so bad we were not able to hear you. Just kind of a quick story, Tom. You were at the Microsoft
Build Conference,
which is kind of like their version of
the WC. It's centered more around developers because Microsoft has a couple different ones because they're such a large company. They have different releases. But the Build Conference is really focused on the developers and all the new technology you're going to be releasing. And, of course, with Microsoft, they did their whole work cloud first announcement, which was a little bit different this year. Normally, what they do is they talk about stuff that's coming out in Windows, and then they talk about some of the new server. They spun it around and talked about server, and then day two was about Microsoft.
We got to have you back to talk about that. That sounds fascinating. Let's see if we get back to... hello, Laura. Is this Laura?
Yes.
Now we can hear what your question is. You got a new Lenovo Yoga, right?
That's right.
Okay, it's a laptop. And your what is your problem?
My problem is that the keys seem to be too sensitive. I type very, very fast.
Yes.
And I can hardly touch them, and it just erases everything I've put in, or it bounces it at the beginning of the sentence, or wipes everything completely out. I have gone in, and I went to the area, and I don't remember what exactly, you know, how it was entitled, but trying to change the sensitivity of the keys.
Yeah, right.
And that hasn't worked.
Well, of the keys or of the touchpad? Is the touchpad jumping around and causing you to type in the wrong spot?
Well, it's not the touchpad. It's the keys.
So the keys, you said it was moving around. A lot of times what you do is when you put your palm rest on there, it's supposed to turn the touchpad off, and sometimes it moves the cursor over a little, so you start typing in the wrong spot. Are you sure that's not what's happening, or maybe that is what's happening?
That could be. So and when you're talking about the touchpad, you're talking about, like, the... screen. Is that what you're talking about? Touchpad?
Well, the touchpad you said is a laptop, right?
Yeah.
So the touchpad on the bottom that you know you used for instead of the mouse, a couple options there are to either A, simply turn it off, and on Lenovo's, I think that would be function key, and I'm looking on my Lenovo right now. it's an F 11 or F12 on some of those, if you have the function key down, it'll actually turn that off. And it'll vary without knowing the exact model you have where that is. There's also, if you look for Synaptics, if you type it in, I'm assuming you have Windows 10, you can pull up the touchpad adjustment. You can turn down the sensitivity of it. But that is a frequent, because we get a lot of people that have that problem. They say it jumps around on them. Right away sets us off like, oh, okay, it's probably touchpad, because that slight amount of wrist, and especially fast typers, they will you don't put a lot of pressure on it. Right. You know, if you're a slow typer, you're hunting and pecking away, so you never touch it. But when you're a touch typist, you're blazing away, and you actually aren't putting much pressure. So it thinks that your palm is off the rest, and it causes the mouse to move ever so slightly. Next thing you know, you've typed a sentence in the wrong spot because the cursor clicked somewhere
right.
else.
Exactly.
Yep,
so tell me that again. So that is with the touchpad.
Yep, and there's ways to turn it off, and then you can just use a mouse. There's one option. Other option is if you type in, and if like it's Windows 10, you can do a search and type in Synaptic,
okay.
and that brings up the touchpad manager, and that
okay.
is so you can turn
yes.
down the sensitivity on there. Pretty much all the Lenovo's, everyone I've seen has a Synaptic is the company that makes the touchpad, and there's a utility within Windows that allows you to adjust it.
So it's called Synaptic.
Synaptic.
Got that?
Got it.
All
Thank
right.
You so much. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thank you for giving us a call. And for the rest of you folks out there, I'm so glad you called. We're delighted to be able to have you come in. Tom, thank you so much. Tom Lawrence for being with us. Great job of helping answer questions. Kasten, thank you, sir.
It's just always a pleasure to be here.
Yep.
Great to be here.
Been a delight, folks. You have a great weekend.
You've been listening to the Internet Advisor Show, Detroit's longest-running, locally-produced computer show, with Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and our team of experts. For more information about our weekly show, to ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit InternetAdvisor.net and look for us on Facebook and Twitter. Don't forget to check the other great podcasts available on this PodcastDetroit.com network. Thank you for listening.